It is March 24th at 7:30 in the morning, and we are starting recording for the GNSO PDP WG Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information session. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. As I said before, this is the meeting of the Policy Development Process Working Group on the issue of translation and transliteration of contact information. And my name is Julie Headland. I'm ICANN, one of the ICANN support staff for this meeting. We do have also for remote participation the Adobe Connect room if you happen to be wishing to join remotely, or if you want to follow along with the chat room, feel free to go into the Adobe Connect room where we also have the slides loaded as well. Without further ado, I will turn things over to our co-chairs, Chris Dillon and Rudy Vonsnick. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. And two thank yous. The immediate thank you is for coming at this early hour to this meeting. The second thank you is for all of you who have sent in various contributions to this group over the last few months. They are very much appreciated. Anyway, as regards the roll call, I mean, if the people sitting in the white chairs would like to come and sit at the table, then please do so. It's a large room. We've got plenty of space, and it makes it easier to take part. Anyway, can we perhaps go round clockwise, please? Yes, thank you.
My name is Don Hollander, from the APTLD. I'm the general manager of the Asia-Pacific Top-Level Domain Association. This is we're not directly affected by this in the CC space, but I think it's a very interesting area and one that the CCs are going to have to look at going forward. So I'm keen to hear what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Jennifer Chung, and part of Dot Asia organization, and also the registry's stakeholder group.
Thank you.
Peter Rimfort, member of the GNSO Council, but here I'm representing Intellectual Property Constituency.
Thank you.
Jim Galvin from the registry stakeholder group and with Ophelius.
Thank you.
Julie Headland, ICANN staff.
Rudy Vonsnick, ANPOC.
Chris Dillon, co-chair.
Peter Dernbach, IPC. Sarmad Hussain. I'm part of this working group, but also part of the team which is conducting the study to evaluate the available solutions for submission and display of IRD.
Thank you.
Steve Chen, ICANN staff.
Marc Blanchet, Virginie, and part of the study with Sarmad.
Sorry, Lars Hoffman, ICANN staff.
Thank you very much. Now, Julius, there's nobody in the Adobe chat, so that's okay.
Yes, there is.
Ah.
Their mics are open.
We have two people in the Adobe Connect room. We have Amy Bivens and James Michelle, ARI Registry, and then we have from staff Natalie Peregrine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As a formality, I need to ask whether there are any members of the working group whose statements of interest have changed recently. Okay, seeing none, that means we can move forward to item four on the agenda, which, there are two presentations. I'm not sure which one is going first, but as regards the presentation, because it's rather a tight agenda, 10 minutes if you possibly can. 10 minutes each.
Thank you, Chris. My name is Steve. I'm the staff support managing the study to evaluate available solutions for the submission and display of the internationalized contact data. Today, we have the study team to give an update. We have been given update to the PDB working group. And this is also a study requested as part of the GNSO Council request. So Samart will give the update, and Samart and Mark will give the update. And followed by that, Jim from the WHO is review team, internationalized registration data expert working group, will provide an update. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So shall I start? This study has been primarily focused on three different things. It is to document the submission and display practices of IRD, which exists today in the CCTLD space, for example, or registrar space. We are also looking at the availability and cost of open source and commercial solutions for transliterating and translating contact data, and also evaluating the accuracy implications for transliteration and translation of this data. The methodology has been we are looking at addressing these questions in multiple ways. As far as the practices are concerned, we've actually designed two separate surveys, one for registries and one for registrar, and that is now under circulation to these to various registries and registrars, and we are now collecting data from them. The survey was also shared with this group for feedback. We are also studying translation and transliteration requirements and methods for languages and scripts for these entities, and also some e-merchants online. And then finally, we are identifying tools which do the transliteration and translation, and evaluating their availability, cost, and accuracy. Before moving on, could we go to the previous slide, please? So one of the things what we have found out, and what we are also trying to encourage, is use of common terminology. I think it's very necessary so that the same message can be shared. We've been sharing some of this terminology with the other working groups who are active at this time. I've included some of the terminology in these slides as well. Not going to go through that terminology, but this will remain available to everybody through the presentation. But what we do suggest is that we formulate a common glossary of terms. What we have been using has been published by the United Nations, and it is called the Glossary of Terms for Standardization of Geographic Names. This is a small subset of terminology from that source, which is relevant for us. Can we move on to the next slide and the next slide? So those are three slides which have some relevant terminology. Just to refer to a couple of them. The United Nations suggests that we can lump together the terms transliteration and translation and call it transformation. There is a concept of reversibility, which means that it should be possible to get the same result back if you translate or transform from one language to another and then back to the same language. Next slide, please. At this time, we are thinking or we're considering three layers of accuracy that we consider are at least necessary to separate out, which we're calling accurate transformation. This is the level of transformation which should, for example, match requirements for legal documents which are submitted in court of law, or, for example, match passport information. Then there's a layer for consistent transformation that's not necessarily accurate, but it is useful, for example, to find places on maps and so forth. And then there is obviously ad hoc transformation, which may or may not be based on anything which is reversible or accurate. Next slide, please. And here, this slide gives some examples. Accurate transformation is context dependent, not only context dependent, in some cases very arbitrary, and therefore almost a manual verification is needed for accurate transformation, and it does require a combination of translation, transcription, and transliteration based on different cases. Consistent transformation may not be accurate, but it is always consistently predictable, and therefore sometimes also more easily reversible. But then there are certain issues with the transliteration. For example, in systems like Arabic, which are just consonantal-based, transliteration would translate into just consonants in English and not readable, for example. Example of accurate transformation, there's an example given in Chinese in which the first letter of each of those words changes to Jin or Kim depending on whether that person is coming from China or Korea. So it's, for example, context-dependent. And ad hoc transformation obviously is ad hoc, so it's totally unpredictable. Next slide, please. There are many organizations which are working in this area. The most significant ones we found include United Nations Group of Experts on Geographic Names. They have many documents out there already which talk about translations, transliterations, as I said, glossary of terms and so on. ISO, International Organization for Standardization, also has many transliteration standards out between different languages and scripts. That list is available with us if that's needed. Universal Postal Union has some recommendations and on not only conventions but also processes. And then Unicode Consortium, of course, has also some recommendations on transliteration. Next slide, please. Very interestingly, we found out that United Nations proposes an alternate method of making data available from one language to another. And what they say is not that data should be only available in a pivot language, as has been the case in our discussions here, but they actually say that data can be or should be made available in all languages, whatever the source of data is, which means that any language data can be made in any other language data. And what I'm quoting here is actually from the United Nations documents, and they say that Roman should be used as a pivot language, and if you have a reversible transformation from a language, you can actually go from any language to any language through Roman. That is actually the model which the United Nations GEGN group recommends. Next slide, please. In many of these cases, there are transformation tables which are needed. However, it is not always possible to find transformation tables between two language pairs. So Unicode suggests that if the transformation pairs between two language pairs are not available through available standards, there are fallback options, which fall back, giving priority to target and then source and then the variant. So if you have a Russian English transformation, you would want to use United Nations tables for transliteration and do transliteration between Russian and English. If UNGEGN table is, for example, not available for a particular language pair table, one could fall back on an alternate table, for example, the BGN table from government of US or PCGN table standard from government of UK or so on. And if that is also not available, one can fall back on script versus a script to language, so Cyrillic to English. So you could progressively fall back until you actually fall back to script-to-script transliteration. So there are possibilities available, more than one possibility is available to transliterate. However, it would be interesting to note that the level at which that transliteration is done perhaps should be part of the data which is available, so that people who are receiving that data know that whether it has been a Russian to English transliteration or Cyrillic to Latin transliteration, so what level of accuracy that transliteration has been done at. Next slide, please. As far as the submission and display practices are concerned, we are actually, we have a survey out. That survey is with you as well, so you could look at details, but we are actually looking at how data is collected, stored, and displayed by registries. Next slide, please. And we are in the process of collecting data from registries at this time. Next slide, please. We're also looking at evaluation looking at tools and evaluating them. As far as evaluation is concerned, we are looking at the breadth of languages a tool covers, and we're obviously not looking at tools which just cover a pair of languages, because you can't just have an arbitrary set of tools. You need possibly a single tool which can cover all the languages, and that would be the most convenient. We are also looking at, for each tool, we're looking at number of languages and scripts they cover, the standards they follow, the accuracy of the various language pairs, licensing, whether it is open or closed, and reversibility of transformations they do. Next slide, please. And that's our final slide. So these are some of the tools we've identified. We're trying to get hold of as many of them as possible. We have a set of test cases we're developing for at least 3 scripts in multiple languages, and we are actually going to be testing each one of these tools on those test cases and reporting back some accuracy results. And that's it. Thank you very much. Maybe pass on quickly to Mark and see if he has to add anything. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. It's absolutely great to see that presentation. The working group has touched on various aspects of it, and just really great to see the detail. Now, any questions perhaps about that presentation? Ah, yes, Petter.
Hello, Petter Ringfort, IPC. I just have a question about your the last page, the possible transliteration tools. I recognize some of them that I have used in other translation cases and got some quite interesting results. And that was not a positive aspect. So can you say today, that is there any of those that are more convenient, more give more realistic result than the others? Can you see any developments on this technical transliteration tools to be better in the very near future? Thanks.
So, yes, there is a lot of variation as far as accuracy is concerned across tools. Even within tools, there is a significant variation in accuracy across scripts and languages. What we're doing, that's why what we're doing is we actually developed a set of test cases. There are about 50 cases per script. We're doing 3 scripts. And multiple languages within each script to gauge the coverage and accuracy. At this time, I think I would probably not want to comment on the accuracy. I agree there are some tools which are not as good, but there may be some which are better. The better ones, we're still not sure whether they meet the expectations. But we will obviously share the results and let the people who have the decision makers on selecting those tools to decide which tool fits the requirements. There are different tools, doing different things. Some are doing translations, some are doing transliterations, some are doing a mixture. So also depends on what kind of use you want, whether you want accurate use or consistent use. So it really depends on a variety of things. Consistency may not require, for example, accuracy. And that's something which this particular group would probably be more interested in discussing.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, there's another question.
So a couple of points. My name is Rick Weston. I sit on the Security and Stability Committee. I've done some work on internationalization, specifically around the Whois data. So a couple of points. Getty Place Names database was one that we looked at that does English and French and was quite interesting from the postal addressing issues and being able to use place names for areas of the world that don't have highly accurate information for transferring or validating postal addresses. Google Translate is a machine statistical transliteration of indexed words. And there's a very interesting open source project called Word2Vec that a lot of that stuff was based on. And so that's an excellent area for analysis on how the insides of that work. One of the issues that I have with using non-Roman, Roman, non-Roman transliteration is in the amount of entropy that's added each time. that you go through one of these processes. And if you try and do several loops through, you find some very interesting and completely inaccurate gibberish that is produced. And so trying to understand the context of the goals that you're attempting to address within the ICANN context as well would be very useful. Also, a review of the R-WHOIS and WHOIS++ templates that were developed in the IETF. There's RFCs on those, and they go into a great deal of analysis. This was done some 10 years ago on being able to create templates that are internationalized, whereas the data that's presented isn't, but it's a presentation technique. But it is centered around WHOIS data. Thanks.
Thank you. Right, can we have the other?
Who's Alex? Maybe just one element of housekeeping. Before you speak, please state your name and your affiliation so that we can, for the transcript, easily discover who was speaking.
Thank you, Jim Galvin. I speak to you here now as the chair of this WHOIS review team, Internationalized Registration Data Expert Working Group update. Next slide, please. We've been working for a while. We were chartered. And we expect to actually have an interim report that we want to put out as soon after Singapore as we can pull this together. We have encountered a couple of interesting questions, and we have an approach, and we want to put those out to the community and, you know, get some input for ourselves to help our deliberations and provide a more useful, hopefully, report out to the community as something to use. We're not a PDP working group, so it's just a set of recommendations that hopefully will feed into other activities and ideally into this activity too, what the Translation and Transliteration Working Group does. So the next slide, please. We have two particular deliverables that we are actively seeking. First, of course, is specifying requirements for internationalized registration data. So what that means, what the expectations will be of domain names, the registration system, what expectations will be of the main parts of that system in supporting internationalized registration data. And then following that, a data model to use for registries and registrars in support of all of the services and applications that go with that. Next slide, please. I'm going to highlight a couple of things right now that you'll get to see when the interim report comes out. So this could be a teaser or a heads up. If anybody has any immediate comments about some of this, that would be helpful and useful. On this slide, I want to focus on the group data by categories. One of the things that was interesting for us in the early discussions is what data elements do we think about and which ones do we specify? If you look at the systems today, there's not a 100% consistent set of data elements that are used. Different registries have different reasons for having extra specialized elements. I mean, there is a certain core that you'll find at all of them, obviously. I mean, contact information is there, a registrar ID, for example, certain dates and stuff. And as we started to realize that, we also noticed then that it would be helpful, we thought, to rather than looking at lists of data elements, to think about categories of data elements. We believed that we would have better luck defining a list of categories of elements rather than a list of elements. And then we could focus on some of the elements in those to help us derive the requirements that we want. So next slide. One of the other things is similar to the terminology issue that Sarmad was talking about for the work that he's doing. We also had a context and terminology issue that we thought about. And so one of the things that's interesting is to distinguish between localization versus internationalization of the data. Localization, of course, would be making the data useful to an actual user, okay, where at the point where the user is involved, that would be where the data is localized. And separating that out from the internationalization requirements, in my view, my presentation here, I would suggest that what happens is the transition from localization to internationalization is where the translation and transliteration step comes in, and making that separation. So these two terms represent the endpoints of what translation and transliteration is doing. Okay, next slide. And this is an example of a localization example. Okay, this is a real-world example, actually, pulled off of JPRS Whois element. But it's also a look at what currently it shows a mixed view. But in principle, if you were localizing registration data and you had a directory service and you had made a query about a particular domain name, you'd like to see something like this if you were localizing the data for the purposes of the user that was asking. Okay, and that, of course, would be independent of the internationalized representation of it, which would be what the registry or the registrar would have stored, or the way in which they might interact with their specific user. Next slide, please. And just give you a moment to look at that slide. So the goal of internationalization is to ensure that you can localize it. Right. So the localization endpoint is about interacting with a user, whether that's on the submission side or the directory service side. And the internationalization would be the format of the data or the representation of the data, which allows you to do the localization and go to and from it. Next slide. So right now, where we are is we have adopted a set of principles for what internationalized registration data means. And we are using these principles to guide us in making choices for the particular requirements for categories of registration data. So the first principle we decided, our current consensus is the most important thing, is what we're calling the user capability principle. The idea here is that a user who wants to provide registration data on behalf of registering a domain name should not be obligated to do anything more than use whatever language or script in which they are most skilled. Okay, you shouldn't put the translation and transliteration requirement on the user who wants to get the domain name. So you want to make sure that the user is the primary constraining factor. You don't want to put any burden on them in particular. And the next most important principle is simplicity and reusability. So for the most part, we want to try to use the work of others, obviously. Sarmad has also already pointed out that there are other standards out there for all kinds of things, and we've been talking about some of the things that he had highlighted there in our group, and we will continue to do that. And the IETF has some documents that are useful. There's some other things around in ICANN that have been done, and they'll all be useful. And then, of course, where there's conflicts, or not necessarily conflicts, but competing choices, go for the thing which is much simpler rather than more complex. And so those are, principles that are guiding what we're up to. Next slide, please. So we have a set of requirements. We have some high-level requirements, two of those would be, requirements for the name and address information, and then requirements for other data categories. Okay. So moving to the next slide, the high-level requirement, the first thing I've really already kind of stated, it draws directly out of the user capability principle. A registrant, should only have to use the language or script in which they're skilled. Okay, and we're recommending and suggesting that that's kind of important. That's the best way to, globalize or internationalize for the user community at large. And one of the things that's interesting is we observe that, well, the internet in some ways knows no boundaries, and so you have a registrar who could put up a website, and they might have someone from anywhere who might come to that website, and so you do run into an interesting situation, and I'll get to this in a minute in the example. I'll show specifically what we're talking about here. But a registrar, it's entirely possible a registrar might not be able to serve a particular user who comes to their website. That might be a consequence of how one does this. A user could come and they want to use a particular language or script, and that registrar doesn't support it. They simply don't have a mechanism for inputting it and allowing that data to come in. Although we observe that registries obviously do have are motivated to incentivize registrars to want to provide what they need to support the target community. So these become the business issues that go with internationalization, and these will surface, and they will simply be there. And you know, at our current thinking at the moment is that a market will have to sort that out. We're not suggesting that we're going to make requirements to fix that problem. Next slide, please. Another important consideration in internationalizing data is all data elements would need to always be tagged with the language or script that's relevant for that data element. As an implementation, we're not talking yet. We will, in the data model, we'll probably make some suggestions about how that's managed. But as a principle, it's important that if you store the data, you have to know what you've got, and you can't localize it if you don't know what you have and moving it around. So that just becomes an important principle for all of the data. Next slide, please. So the thing to highlight here is this now begins. These slides are a set of requirements, and I'm not going to go through all of these. I want to highlight one in particular for a discussion point. Again, this falls into the category of heads up, because we'll be describing this in more detail in the document in our interim report, and we're specifically looking for comments from the community and anything that folks want to say here too. In looking at the issue of the address of a registrant, and then of course there's also technical administrative contact points and contact information, the question comes up as to what should the requirements be on an address that's entered by a user. And we have three proposals right now in our group which we're currently discussing, and we're interested in getting some comments from the community on what they think of each of these separate ones. You can imagine the easiest one being you simply allow free form text. So in some way, the registrar has to figure out the language or script that's being put in, and you allow the user to put in anything, and then there's no other requirements on that data. However, if you think a bit about data validation as a new requirement that's coming out for registrars, the problem with a free-form text version is the registrar then really has an open-ended data validation or data verification problem. They have no context in which to execute on that requirement in their contract. So another possibility would be to add a little bit of a constraining factor, and that is it can be free-form text, but the language or script that's used for the address that's entered should be appropriate for the region in which it's located. So if you're putting in a U.S. address, you know, you would allow yourself to, you would require, you know, English and U.S. ASCII. If you're putting in a French address, you know, you would allow for the French language and it's a French script set of characters that you could use to enter your address. But of course, the issue that you run into there is that in many cases, in some regions, you are allowed mixed script, and Arabic numerals or Roman numerals are sort of the common thing. The easy one to put out, even if you have, for any kind of language, you often will see a sudden insertion of Roman numerals that are put in there. And so you do have to allow that you could have mixed scripts and in use, or mixed languages in use in the entering of an address. And so you would need to be able to accommodate that, and registrars would have to be able to support that. The third proposal down here is put here, in some sense you have to account for completeness. One of the questions that's in front of this working group is whether there should be a single language or script in which all registration data appears, and or if there should be translation and transliteration requirements at different points in the system. And this third proposal is intended to accommodate waiting for the results of this group. You know, should you somehow require that the data somehow has to get into a U.S. ASCII form, perhaps, if there's a single language or script. Or you could imagine TLDs often will only support drawn from what they allow for the domain name. They allow a domain name to be entered in certain language, certain scripts, right? You could buy your domain name. Perhaps you want to suggest that the contact information needs to be in that same language or script, too. So those are sort of the three things that we're thinking about with respect to address that we really do need some comments and advice from the community about. And when you see the interim report, you'll have that in a comment period, and we'd like to get people thinking about that now. If you go to the next slide, you can just pause here for a few seconds to give people a chance to look at that. Most of the rest of the categories of data elements have fairly straightforward requirements, at least we hope that they do. From our point of view in the working group, and next slide, please, we really didn't have too much contention or discussion about these. We very quickly got to consensus on the rest of these requirements. But again, the community will have a good chance to look at those and tell us what they think when you look at the interim report. Next slide, please. And you can see here as you look down the left-hand column, probably should have pointed that out on the first one, these are the categories of data elements that we have developed so far. Based on a survey of what data elements are out there, we divided things up into the categories that you see on the left. And next slide. So our next steps here are to have an interim report about the requirements, hopefully as soon after the Singapore meeting here as we can pull together our text. And then we'll begin work on the data model while we wait and then incorporate comments from the community. And hopefully, if all goes well, we expect that we'll actually be done and have our two work products completed by London, unless something especially contentious happens from the comments on our interim report. I guess we'll see how that goes. And next slide is the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Another very fine and useful presentation. Perhaps we should start with the question that you asked about the address fields, whether anybody actually has any comment on the three options. Would it be helpful to display those that slide again?
Rudy Vansnick speaking for the transcript. Jim, when you mentioned the proposal too, when you say it's appropriate for the region, is that at national level, country level, or is it even in the country, the different language levels that are officially recognized?
And Jim Galvin for the transcript, and that is exactly one of the questions that is in front of our working group too. And we had some discussion about that. One of the things that I'll point out from that discussion, and there are a couple of other people in the room here from the working group, so if they want to add anything to this, that would be fine. I wouldn't say that we have complete consensus on this point, but we observe that the UPU requirements for postal addresses all have the country field. They suggest that the postal services for a particular sovereign nation, they can have their own requirements for what they want postal addresses to look like. So one could determine that region could mean whatever the postal requirements defined it as, and you could fall back on that as a possibility and use it. But one of the reasons for putting this question out there is, in fact, to see what the community has to say about what region might be. We in particular have a couple of registrars, obviously, in our working group. And an important question is, well, what's a region? And if I'm a registrar, am I now supposed to somehow know what all the regions are and then know what all the requirements are in those regions? And how exactly am I going to do that, and what does that mean? But this goes back to the business rules that might apply. You're either targeting a particular area or you're not. So if you're targeting an area, then you'll know all the rules because you'll figure them out. You just have the problem of, well, I might have a presence in an area because I'm on the internet, and you can't really hide because there's no boundaries. So suddenly you're in a situation where a customer might try to come to you, and you're going to have to turn them away because you simply don't know how to deal with them. So these are some of the issues that are there. No solid consensus, but we'll see what the community says too. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Chris Dillon for the transcript. Now, there were two questions. I think Petter was first, and then there's one further down the table. Oh, and one over here as well.
Well, first of all, it seems that you have made a fantastic work. And when I heard your presentation, I wondered what's left for us to do in this case. But I had a question around these three proposals. And as I understand, when I freely read it, proposal two seems to be quite a practical one. And you mentioned that And I guess that was the proposal too. The translation that could fit for the local postal office. And without going into any details, it seems quite good possibility for me, because looking at it on the legal view, as long as you can actually find with the local post or when the police search for a specific address, if you can actually identify it, even if there are, as we have seen, five or six or seven different language variations of that specific address. But if it's one of these addresses that's officially registered and translated, if that's one that also locally can be found in that way, I think that's a good proposal. And sorry, I have a quick additional question. You mentioned that you would be in a final report in London. Is that correct? So then I turn to us. What shall we do before London to cooperate in this matter?
Actually, to a considerable extent, that there is cooperation going on. I mean, as anybody who visits the weekly meetings, Jim is almost always there, so there is a lot of communication going on. Thank you. And then I think it was, yes.
My name is Rick Wesson. To speak to the points that Jim was raising around Proposal 3, that if there was the capability for free address or regional address templates so that all registrars could leverage such information to analyze the information that is posted by a registrant, then I think Proposal 3 would be extremely valuable. Is it Proposal 3? It would be valuable to have that done. It seems like a reasonable capability that ICANN could leverage some either their technical prowess, their members with the IPU, Postal Union, and make this available. It could be quite useful. And so I believe that it is a capability that does exist, although it doesn't appear that that's widely known.
Okay, thank you. Jim, have you any response to that or no? Okay. Yes.
Peter Dermott from the IPC for the transcript. First of all, I'd like to thank Jim for the excellent report and Samad for the excellent report. I think both of these are extremely helpful for our work. My question is really a procedural question, which is for this expert working group, I've seen the charter of the expert working group, but do you have a wiki online where the resources that the expert working group is using are shared? Because I do think that as we do our work between now and London, in addition to the interim report, which will be out shortly, some of the materials and references that you've been using might be very helpful and for that sharing of information. So I just haven't been able to find it. It might already be there.
I can answer that. Yes, it's online, and I can send the link to the wiki to the working group.
Thank you very much.
We have Mark in the queue.
Ah, yes. Mark.
Mark Blasche, speaking as an individual. Jim, have you discussed, looked at, or you know, whatever, about having multiple versions of those fields, such as, for example, two scripts, or you know, the address being, you know, written in two different scripts or languages, or either user contributed or machine translated, or you know, those. Have you looked at this possibility, or is that not part of the requirements? Or
so, Jim Galvin for the transcript. I mean, actually, that's why they each begin with the phrase, each of those proposals say freeform text. Okay, so the actual format that's in there, the user, so I'll sort of walk through an explicit example for how one could make this work. And it's not necessarily, we don't necessarily have consensus on this point, but I'll just, for explanatory purposes, I mean, a user could enter the data in whatever form is convenient for the user. I mean, that's sort of the model that we're headed towards here. So they will just type it in. It would be up to the registrar would take it in and would have to know the language that's being, or in principle the language that's being used and the script, and be able to figure that out in looking at the freeform text and then encode it in an appropriate way in which to store it. And so you would store it encoded so that you could then flag it and would have always have the language and script tags that go with it for the data going forward. But that's what's meant by freeform text here.
Okay, but for example, it's typical in various countries and that people have business cards with, you know, a local script, you know, version of the postal address, and then Romanize, for example, or other script. So my question is, so they effectively have two addresses. So that was my point. Have you discussed, looked at the fact that people could have more than one address field in most likely in different scripts?
Thank you. I apologize. Now, I didn't quite catch the question, but I get that now. Actually, that, at least in my view, the question has been raised in our group, but we really haven't talked about it too much, except that we're aware of the fact that, yes, if you had two forms of the address for whatever reason, whether the registrar creates a transformation of some sort or the user creates a transformation and happens to provide you with both as part of the registration process, you do suddenly have a synchronization issue. And you now have a priority issue. Which one matters if they're in conflict? And what do you do about that? And in fact, we've kind of left it at that, just as open questions at the moment. But I would observe that I think that's also a question this group has to address. And maybe that's an area for our two groups to collaborate and talk about. I mean, if you're going to translate or transliterate the information and decide that somebody is going to be burdened with that requirement, you're going to have to say something about which one gets priority if they should ever become in conflict and or in some way indicate which was the one entered by the user and which is the one that you created, something like that. So it's an open question in our group. I remember putting the question out there in the early days, but we haven't gotten to focusing on that particular issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm not sure what the... Oh, yes, okay. Yeah.
If I may have a sub-question. Continuing on that thread, the way, it's not necessarily script related, but the way an address is structured, for example, the street name and stuff is usually in different orders depending on the script or localization or, you know, various reasons. Therefore, a free form text means that, you know, for one entry it's there and the other entry is there, and it's kind of, so if we are contemplating any kind of machine generated, you know, trans something, it might be even more difficult. So have you looked at the drawbacks of freeform text, and there the drawbacks are related to handling various machine transformations.
So thank you for that question. I can only give you a partial response. In fact, one of the reasons why we're sort of stuck on this address field is because, at least I think, because of issues like you're raising. As we looked at examples of what addresses look like, you start to realize that structure is an interesting question, shall we say. The only observation that you can make about it is the UPU, does say that individual countries or sovereign, regions that have postal regulations, each of those areas specifies their own requirements for what's a valid address and what it's supposed to look like. And, of course, even that has lots of options in sort of the which makes it tough on a registrar who wants to target different communities and different regions. I don't know how to deal with that, and our working group hasn't figured out how to deal with it either. But I suspect we'll, you know, our goal here is to try and document this question and make that part of the discussion here, especially in the interim report. And it may be that that becomes a question that we even leave in the final report, because at some point, you know, I would expect our work product is going to be input to some PDP process somewhere along the way, which we'll have to decide. And if there are decisions to be made about choices, it may be left to that group to make the final choice. We'll just lay out the issues and leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're starting to time out, but two quick comments, one from Edmund and one from the gentleman standing at the mic.
Thank you. Two quick comments, actually, in response to, I think, Jim's mentioning about the transliteration and Mark's suggestion there, or comment there. I think I hear from Samard's presentation earlier, Jim, I think we should bring it back to our group, is that part of the recommendation in that suggestion was to actually tag it and say what kind of transformation happened in the resulting sort of text, whatever. So I think that's probably one way to go, which is to tag not only what the transliterated form is in terms of language or script, but also what transformation that took us there. So I think that's a pretty good point that we should take back to the group. On the other point about the freeform situation and, you know, how the data is formed, I think we've talked a little bit about the in the group that our focus is more about the internationalization of it. Whether the of course we need to think about the validity and those kind of things, but what Mark you were talking about is probably more about the who is accuracy general case, because right now it is in free form text. So that's, you know, that level of data structure should probably not be the IRD kind of the internationalization part, but the overall who is discussion that we're having at ICANN in general.
Okay, thank you. And
is this on? Yeah. I'm David Conrad, representing myself, I guess, also on SFAC. I guess I have a question that is, you know, I probably is fairly resolved already, but I just wanted to clarify. Based on your question, Mark, it sort of implied that there was some thoughts about the actual use of this, of, you know, in particular the address field. In a previous life, I was in a position to try to deal with WHOIS data, registration data, throughout the Asia-Pacific Rim region. And it quickly became apparent that how that data was to be recorded within the registration database depended very much on how it was actually going to be used. And since we at APNIC didn't really have a particular use for that data, we didn't place any restrictions on how it was to be encoded by the registrant, allowing, you know, basically making it impossible to parse in a, you know, in a machine sense. So I guess the question that I'd have is, you know, has the actual use of these fields been identified in the context of, you know, is it WHOIS or is it some other purpose, you know, statistical, you know, gathering, or is it for identification of end users for serving legal process or that sort of thing?
Okay, thank you very much.
I'll make a comment. One of the problems is one of the reasons why. I'm sorry. So this is Jim Galvin for the transcript. Start again. I think that one of the motivations for moving towards categories rather than data elements was in part because the question that David is asking is somewhat difficult to answer for our purposes. It would be nice if the Directory Services Expert Working Group was in fact done and had decided what that was supposed to look like, because in some sense we would know then what the data elements are that we're dealing with. That group, in fact, is defining purposes of registration data, and that's driving, in some sense, the set of elements. And you know, maybe we can move towards having a little more standardization and consistency with respect to all of that. You know, we had that problem, at least in the working group that I'm chairing, in our expert working group, if you just don't know what data elements you're working with. And so it's a little difficult to talk about the purposes of the data, and that's why we sort of drifted, at least in my mind, towards categories of data elements and figured, okay, someone else is going to fix that problem. Let's, you know, approach this from a place that we can and provide some usefulness. So I know that that's probably not a satisfactory answer for you. You know, I feel like we at least are aware of the question, but we don't know how to answer it. So we chose an approach that gets us close. That would be my response for the moment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we're just about to go over the time, so I'll just wind up very quickly. And just to say, we do have two replies from SOs and ACs. We've got ALAC and NCSG. We haven't had time to do those today. They're very interesting. We'll do those on our next call. We've also got a lot of talking to do about desirability. You know, should it be transliteration or translation? And that's likely to be a matrix, and that will also be covered in the near future. Rudy's been doing work on that. I think that's more or less it. Thank you very much for this morning, Rudy.
Yes, Rudy Vansnick speaking. We are also trying to figure out, and it's an answer to some of the questions about what's next, and then what are we going to do with the data if it comes late for us. The planning is that for April 24, we will try to do the stock take and try to find out where we are, what data we have, and what we are missing, so that we can start creating a review of where we are and what we still have to do. And another deadline in the agenda is June 25th, the London meeting, where we will have again the face-to-face working group meeting, and where we will try to present the work we achieved up till that moment. It is clear that it is not going to be an easy task, as we know that we are influenced by a lot of other activities that are going on, and especially what the expert working group is doing. But I'm also referring to the study that highlights a lot of things that we have to consider also, and that will probably be the biggest task to produce this matrix, so that it is, as James has been also putting in his slides, make it simple and understandable, because otherwise we will have a lot of discussions on the understanding, and because this was already in our discussions in the beginning, a critical issue. What are we looking at? What is our mission? What is our task? And where are the limits of our task? So that's probably the work that we will try to finish for June, so that we have something we can really work on to start producing maybe an interim recommendation to the board, or to the GNSO.
Thank you very much for that. One final comment before we all go off for the welcome ceremony. I think everything is in the wiki. I mean, obviously, we'd like to add some text from the two presentations today, but so particularly for people who don't participate very often in the group, or every now and then, for new people, if you look in the wiki, you will see everything. We're not sort of, there is nothing, as far as I know, there's nothing major that isn't in there. Thank you very much indeed.
And I'll just add, thank you everyone for joining, and also for those in the Adobe Connect room. There is some food outside. Grab something on your way to the opening ceremony, which is in Canning and Padang, which is just over off to the left. And thank you again.